any apologies. What I need to know through the record is that if more of the parties who aren't here, because they do have other commitments, do need them to put in an official apology. So just to note that for the future, the smaller parties. But in attendance here, we have from DPI, Ms. Majaga. Now, we ask you how it's rained. And in attendance with her is Professor Peter Martinez, chairperson of the South African Council on Space Affairs, and also advocate of this correct Sakula, a member of the council. Thank you for joining your colleague, right, and Ms. Nandu. On that note then, we're going to have the adoption of the agenda, if we may. Yes, thank you, Honourable William Peckinson. Bye. Yes, Honourable MacPherson. Yes, Honourable
Brown. Can I just ask the closure? Is that not supposed to be a property? Maybe we can sacrifice tea to make that happen. Because of other questions.
Clearly an error there, yes. In fact, we do need to move on here, and if you'll just give me 1 minute. If I can be a little bit more difficult, we will be doing a rolling tea break, and maybe what we've got to think of doing is moving on until we get through the budget. Is that agreed? So it could be 1:30 or 1:40, or 1:45. We're not going to waste more time, Dr. Martin is going to hand over immediately to Emma. Will ETI start or will you start?
Thank you, Ms. I will ask my colleague pardon because I've got a problem with my voice and food day, so there will be some division of labor and work over to the
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. It's a great pleasure for us to be back here at this meeting of the Portfolio Committee, and an interesting point for me to note that some of you are actually also members of the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee, which I think is an excellent thing, because space is one of those things that is really a cooperative governance issue and does not fit neatly in the domain of just a single entity of government, and we can come back and discuss reasons for that. We would like to give you an update this morning of the recent developments in the space arena in South Africa, and particularly because this is the legislative body, to update you on the process of reviewing our space legislation. Now, before we do that, and before I get into the presentation, it might be worth just reflecting a little bit on, given all the legislative priorities of Parliament, why is it that it's important for us to be spending some time considering outer space matters? I mean, after all, some people might consider this perhaps to be a bit esoteric. And I think it's very important for us to all be quite clear that space is an important legislative priority, and I'll outline why we believe this is the case. And it's quite simple. The analogy that I like to use is to refer to plumbing. You know, we are all, space is part of the plumbing of modern life. And we are all reliant, and I mean personally, I don't mean at government level, I mean as individuals. We are all personally reliant on space systems in ways that many of us don't realize. Most of you this morning, just even getting here, would have made use of the space system in one way or another. If you have a cell phone, if you use a cell phone, you are relying on the operation of the space system. If you use ATM cards, debit cards, you're relying on the operation of the space system. Streetlight networks, financial markets, all of these systems rely on space systems. They the dependence is so embedded in modern society that it's actually quite remarkable. But of course, like any kind of plumbing, you only really notice it when the service or the benefit disappears. As we know only too well, the challenges that we're currently facing with electricity, and it's interesting to see the heightened awareness around electricity issues in the general populace, just because of the challenges we're currently having. So space, really very much part of the plumbing of modern life, essential for the modern information society, and therefore very, very important that South Africa should be well positioned to take advantage of the benefits that space-based services and data can offer, and that we also support the industry, that we create an empowering environment for our industry to utilize the space technologies and also deliver services to our citizens. So that in a nutshell is why we believe this is a legislative priority. What you see projected on the...
Could I just stop yes. you for a moment, Dr. Martin, is we will, at the end of this meeting, be taking a position on certain things. And as I see when we open, this is actually a joint meeting. It's not simply a meeting with trade and industry. And we do, as when I go with finance, I join them. We'll be taking joint decisions. If we could ask our doctor, the chairperson of Science and Technology, to come up here. It is a joint meeting and not a meeting of trade and industry.
What is currently projected is an overview of the presentation, which, as Ms. Majata indicated, I will be sharing with the colleagues here to present the information to you. So we will present various parts of this. We will begin with a brief introduction of the Space Affairs Act, just to remind you of the current regulatory environment, and then I will briefly present the review process that has taken place, and we will present some of the shortcomings in the present acts before handing over to my colleagues who will present the emerging elements of the revised or new legislation. And then we will conclude with some remarks for your consideration, and then I will, at the end, we will draw your attention to some space-related events that I believe will be of interest to the honourable members present, as the honourable co-chairperson said, as far as that we would we see space very much as a cooperative governance issue, and there may be an international event that I think is of interest to members from the various committees. So if we could then advance to the next slide, which is the one on current legislation. Just to remind you, space affairs in the Republic are currently governed in terms of the South African Space Affairs Act, Act 84 of 1993, which was amended in 1995. And the principal objects of the Act are to establish the national space policy to be followed by the Republic, and the Act also established the South African Council for Space Affairs as the regulatory entity in the country. Among the objects of the Council are to advise the Minister of Trade and Industry on our international obligations in matters related to space affairs, and also to authorize and supervise space activities. This is actually an international obligation stemming from the treaties that South Africa has ratified, notably the Outer Space Treaty and the other instruments that flow from it, which I will refer to in a few moments. The Space Council is also empowered to establish and register and maintain the National Register of Domestic Space Entities. So these could comprise governmental and non-governmental entities, as the case may be, and also, of course, finally, to ensure the safety of all space activities. And by this we refer to safety not only to the environment and to people on the ground, or person and property, but also safety in terms of the space environment, because our legislation, although it was adopted in 93 and is in need of review, was actually quite progressive for its time. Already in 1993, our legislation made specific reference to South Africa being a responsible user of open space, which at that time was a fairly novel concept in space lawmaking internationally. So we can then move on to the next slide, which is the rationale for the review of the Space Affairs Act. Why is it that it is important to review the Act at this time? Well, basically, since the Act was adopted in 1993, there have been really enormous strides made in the international and domestic space arena. And internationally, we have seen a huge transformation of the space arena from being dominated by governmental entities to now being dominated by non-governmental entities. The number and diversity of space actors has grown enormously in the last 20 years. It's no longer just states, it's now universities, companies, research groups, even private individuals are all becoming space actors. And so clearly there's a need to make sure that regulation, space governance globally and also at the national level keeps pace with these developments. On the domestic front, we have seen developments both at policy and regulatory level, or statutory level. These include, for example, the SAMHSA Act being passed in 2008, which established our National Space Agency. South Africa adopted a National Space Policy in 2008, and that was preceded by the adoption of a National Space Science Technology Strategy in 2007. Also, in 2011 and 12, South Africa ratified or acceded to the Registration Convention and the Liability Convention. These are two international instruments that flow from the Outer Space Treaty and deal with the registration of space objects and also how to deal with questions of viability arising out of damage caused from accidents either in outer space or on the Earth or in the air due to space objects. South Africa now has ratified those. When the Act was passed, South Africa still had not ratified those two instruments. And so, of course, we need to bring the Act into alignment with our new existing international obligations. I mentioned the growing number of space actors, particularly in the non-governmental sector internationally. The same is the case on the domestic front. We are beginning to see the emergence of non-governmental entities in South Africa that are playing an increasingly active role in space affairs. So, for example, the academic and research sector, private companies, and so on. And we need to be sure that our legislation able to deal with the challenges of accommodating these new actors, but also to create an enabling environment for our industry and for our scientific and academic activities. Also, what we have seen in the international arena is because the progress of space developments is so rapid. In the early days of the space age, the superpowers and the other major spacefaring nations were able to come together in the United Nations framework and to negotiate a number of treaties. There are basically five treaties that govern the activities of states in outer space. But the rapid pace of development has now essentially outpaced treaty-style agreements, and you know, because it can easily take a decade or more to negotiate new treaties. So what is tending to happen more often now is that the international bodies are developing what are called soft law instruments, such as principles, guidelines, etc., which states adopt on a voluntary basis. Now, these may not be legally binding, but that does not mean that they are non-legal. And there are a number of these principles and guidelines that are very important for states to consider, and a number of states have decided to domesticate these international principles and guidelines into their national domestic regulations, thus making them enforceable at national level. And this is one way that lawmaking is keeping up with the rapid pace of developments in the international space arena. So, as a signatory to these international treaties, we have to align our activities with our international obligations. If we can then move on to the next slide, just to give you an idea of the treaties that South Africa is party to, now these, I list there four treaties. This is by no means comprehensive. There are additional instruments, but in terms of the focus of today's discussion and the review of the Space Affairs Act, these are the most relevant ones for our purposes today. The most fundamental of these is the International, the Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space, the so-called Outer Space Treaty, which was adopted in 1967. The other agreements listed on the slide there are essentially more detailed instruments that flow from the basic principles in the Outer Space Treaty. So, for example, the so-called rescue agreement has to do with the return and rescue of astronauts, space-like participants, but also space objects. The convention on liability has to do with liability for damages arising from space activities, and of course, if there are questions of liability, one needs to know to whom or to which state does a space object belong, and so therefore that is the purpose of the registration convention. Perhaps I should underline at this time that in terms of international law, space activities are the responsibility of states. So states carry the responsibility for the authorization and supervision of space activities at international level, not private entities or non-governmental entities. It is state, and that is one of the reasons why we have our national space legislation and the Space Council, which examines license applications very, very closely, because when we license a space activity, the Council, in essence, is ensuring that the obligations that the state will incur as a result of licensing that are reasonable and acceptable for the Republic, and that there is a balance in terms of the benefits due to the Republic and also the risks associated with any space activity. In addition to those treaties, there are a number of United Nations principles in various space activities, and these are discussed in the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Use of Outer Space, of which South Africa is an active member, and probably, I would say, certainly among the most active in the among the African nations in this committee. If we move on to the next slide then, we will discuss the review process thus far. We began the review of the Space Affairs Act by commissioning a study in 2012. The study was done through the University of Pretoria, and we will present some of the main findings of that study before going to the new elements. And the purpose of the study was to scope international best practices and to benchmark the current South African legislation against the best practices in the intergovernmental arena, but also at a national level by referring to other countries that were selected as appropriate comparisons. The study was also to provide a series of recommendations for possible amendments and to identify gaps and other areas in the Act that needed attention. Consultations took place with a number of stakeholders in 2013 and 14, and we have received and are considering quite a wide number of comments as part of the process of the review of the Act. An ad hoc committee was established to drive the review of the Act, and you see the members of the ad hoc committee listed at the bottom of the slide, and two of the members of the ad hoc committee, Ms. Majaja and Advocate Sekula, are here and will be addressing you shortly. Also, as part of the review process, we have established an interdepartmental working group for the review of the Act. You will recall that in my opening remarks, I referred to space as being really a cooperative governance issue, and so it's important that this process is not only being driven by the Department of Trade and Industry, under whom the Space Council resides, but really is an interdepartmental process. And so this working group has been established through a process whereby the DG of Trade and Industry invited his counterparts in these other departments to nominate representatives for the participation in this interdepartmental working group. And as you can see, it comprises Department of Science and Technology, DERCO, Department of Defense, Constitutional, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Telecommunication and Postal Services, and it also comprises the National Space Agency, SAMHSA, and an industry association that represents broadly the interests of all the industry players. The first meeting of the working group took place on the 28th of April, and one of its first decisions was to essentially pick up from the progress made by the ad hoc committee and to continue steering the process forward. The working group will present a series of substantive elements for the review of the legislation to a drafting team, which will include legal practitioners who are members of the Space Council and also a designated official from the Department of Trade and Industry. So very briefly, before we get to the new elements, let me just present the summary of findings of the review. So the review found, not surprisingly, that the current pace of developments has outpaced the existing Space Affairs Act, and that the current regulatory framework does not adequately address our needs and the developments that have taken place in the past 20 years. And also the review identified that there was a need to clarify certain elements of implementation of the Act. These have been highlighted by the recent increased level of activity. For example, certain things that are perhaps better addressed through regulation than being prescribed specifically in the Act, and these issues need to be clarified. Space activities should be seen to encompass the launch, operation, guidance and re-entry of space objects, so in other words, objects entering into outer space and returning from outer space. Again, this is an area of increasing importance because people now talk about space tourism, so it's not just sending stuff up, it's making sure that the space objects return safely, and that's very important. So it creates all sorts of questions around delineation of airspace and outer space and so on. One of the areas that was that the review identified as important was the current existing separation between implementation and supervision of space activities. The review identified this separation as a strength in the current legislative framework and recommended that that distinction should be maintained going forward. And the review process further recommended that the revised framework should reflect the domestic space priorities and policy objectives, which was not the case in the previous legislation. You will recall that the policy was adopted quite some years after the Act was passed. They also recommended that the Act should, the review process should consider questions of commercialization and industrialization and how the framework can support our industry. And it also recommended that the review process should examine linkages with other relevant legislation, such as the Electronic Communications Act and the Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction Act, among others, just to give examples. Again, coming back to this point of cooperative governance of space affairs. So, another recommendation was that the Secretariat, the SAXA Secretariat, should be strengthened to enable it to meet the increased demands for regulation and oversight of space activities. Up until now, the Secretariat of the Space Council has been a very small-scale operation, and that has sufficed for the regulatory needs of the country. But we are beginning to experience increasing demands for by industry and various other players for regulatory support and services, things like registration, questions about process and so on. And so the study anticipated that the Secretariat should be strengthened as a result of this review process. And also that the review process should clarify the issues that need to be addressed through regulations as opposed to being in the Act. So those are the main findings of the review process. And what I'd now like to do is to hand over to my colleague Advocate Sakula, who's been very closely involved with considering the elements for the review of legislation and to present this to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, we are honored to present our findings in respect to current legislative processes regulating space activities in the country. As the good affairs already illustrated, South Africa is a member of party to a number of international conventions and treaties in space affairs. As such, the country is obliged to respond to the demands of these treaties. I don't know if we can be able to go back to slide number 5, just to illustrate what those treaties are. So these 4 treaties that we are party to establish certain principles, guidelines, that space actors must comply with at an international level. And these have to be now incorporated or somehow complied with at a domestic level, at a national level. In order to do this, there is a requirement that countries must adopt a recommendation that countries must have a national space legislation. That is contained in Article 6 of the first treaty that we are dealing with, Outer Space Treaty. Article 6 states that states are responsible for activities of their nationals in outer space. Space states, countries, governments are also liable for any damage caused by space objects arising out of those activities of the nationals. So the other 4 treaties, as you can see, the rescue of astronauts, the return of astronauts and return of objects, for instance, will then outline the processes whereby if a South Africa launched a satellite called Sumbandilasat, and that satellite happens to be found in the territory of Russia or of any other country, what are the respective obligations of Russia or that other country vis-a-vis South Africa in that space object? Then that treaty outlines the processes of notification and return of that object. The other important one is the Convention on International Liability. What if a space object on its way to outer space to its location, the hit an aeroplane in the airspace of Zambia, for instance, who is responsible for that? And well, if this outer space from Sumbandilasat is now in outer space and spinning out of control and hit the International Space Station, who is responsible for that? That is outlined in the Convention on International Liability. The other important one is the Convention on Registration. For every state that launches a space object, that state is responsible to register a space object on its own national register and also inform the Secretary General of the United Nations through the Office of Outer Space about that space object that South Africa has launched to Sumbandilasat, the nature of the satellite, the location of that satellite, its expected duration, and what it is supposed to do. Those are now international obligations. And now our Space Affairs Act indicates, as the first slide has indicated, that South Africa must comply with its international obligations. Now, as I stated before, those international obligations are then put together in a national space legislation called the Space Affairs Act of 1993 that has now been amended once, and now it's subject to review and either amendment published or a new Outer Space Affairs Act be put in place. We can continue to the slide number 10.
With that background, then we evaluated based on the recommendations of the study
that was done to benchmark South African legislative framework with the recent developments on the international plane, as well as what other countries' laws are in regard to the conduct of space activities look like. As a parallel to that, as a matter of fact, the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Use of Outer Space was also involved in the same process. It established a working group on the national space legislation to look globally as to what the national space laws of the different countries look like, what those international obligations as contained in those international treaties are, and what a probable model for a national space legislation should be. This it was because different countries engaged in space activities, there were different approaches to regulating their space activities. Some do an administrative decree. For instance, Algeria has got two presidential decrees on their legislative books, which may establish one, the Algerian Space Agency. The other one establishes Algeria's responsibility under the Liability Convention. That's about it. So how about the rescue agreements? How about the other registration convention? Not them to be the Nigerian law. On the other hand, contrast with Nigeria. Nigeria has got a comprehensive national space law that deals with who is supposed to license, who sits on the council, and what the technical characteristics of the space objects must comply with. That is contained in that. So the U.S. and then the 30 countries, out of a total of 70 countries that have got active space programs, have got national legislation. So in approximately 30, Madam Chair, out of a total, this approximation, about 70 countries are actively engaging in space programs, as in having a satellite or some other activities, but most do not have space legislation. So it was then incumbent upon the United Nations as an umbrella body dealing with space activities to make recommendations as to what space activity, space law should look like. We participate in those committees, we made inputs as well, and look at our acts. This is the recommendation that the UN working group recommended what the national space legislation should look like. That is now a UN resolution that the professors alluded to, that we have a number of UN resolutions that are persuasive in the legal sphere. They are not legally binding like the treaties, the four treaties, but states are encouraged, in fact, to take heed and look into these UN resolutions when they adopt their legislative frameworks. So the UN resolution on national space legislation has got 9 elements, and these elements we unpacked it and we looked at, examined our national legislation, the Space Affairs Act, and see whether or not the Space Affairs Act has got these elements incorporated in it. We found that it does not. We only have like 2 or 3 of those in our present act. Therefore, the analysis revealed that the present Space Affairs Act cannot be amended. We just need to come with a totally radically new act based on the substantive provisions that need to be incorporated, and some of them need to be deleted under the new act. I will take you through some of the issues that we looked at, what is contained in the current act and what we envisage should be contained in the new bill. First, any act must come with definitions in respect to the main terms that are going to be utilized in that act. Our present act has got these terms, however, they are not clearly defined. One of them that is pretty much sticky that we're discussing a great deal, and we really would like to have assistance in this regard, is especially with the Department of Defense, Individual Purpose Technologies. The present act, the Space Affairs Act, gives as one of the main objectives that dual purpose technologies, the minister must define the policy and the legislative framework for establishing, for manufacturing, for dissemination of dual purpose technologies. But then what is dual purpose technology? It's not defined in the present in the Space Affairs Act. It simply says, look at the Non-Proliferation Act for definition of dual purpose technology. It may be members who have due regard to the fact that weapon of mass destruction during 1993, transitional arrangements was a great topic in the country because of the existence of a nuclear technology that was being developed. as such, when the country has to be admitted in the international fold, there was a need to look closely at the nuclear program, and that's where the idea of dual purpose technology that needs to be regulated came to being. So at the same time as the Space Affairs Act of 1993 was promulgated, there was also promulgated a non-proliferation act that sought to restrict the development and transfer of nuclear technology. That also created a council called the Non-Proliferation Council, which also sits as a DGI. Matter of fact, the two acts were dealt together here in this committee and were passed together by this parliament at the same time in 1993. So the Non-Nuclear Proliferation Council and the Space Affairs Council are actually twin councils. So that term, whilst in the Space Affairs Act is incorporated, there is no clear definition of what it is, then we have to go to the non-nuclear proliferation to look at what are dual-purpose technologies. In short, honorable members, dual-purpose technologies are simply those technologies that can be used for both civilian and military purposes. Now, under the present international control regime for missiles, satellites and space objects are defined as dual-purpose technologies, because they can also be used for military purposes. Matter of fact, there's a trend right now on the international front to use civilian satellites for military applications. What is now the position within South Africa that the Space Affairs Council has dealt only with civilian issues, not military purposes? Then we need to take out that section in the new act to say the new Outer Space Affairs Bill must not have reference to any military applications of space technologies or not. That is the question that the members of the committee will look into at some point in time. We are currently with that. And we engage closely with the Non-Proliferation Council on this matter. And their view is that the race should not be a disjuncture as such, because the territorial jurisdiction of the two councils differ. Firstly, the Non-Proliferation Council deals with matters of manufacture and export. The Space Affairs Council deals with matters as they relate to the use of outer space. So, in effect, the same technology can be looked at by the Non-Proliferation Council, where the purpose is to export it to another country. Then it will serve as a Space Council if that piece of technology is to be exported to outer space. Now, one intervention in outer space is now a jurisdictional aspect of the Space Council, which is mandated to deal with activities conducted in outer space. Similarly, we have to look closely at what launching, traditionally launching was simply using a rocket to place space objects in our atmosphere or in outer space per se. Today, good doctors indicated we have to look at issues of re-entry of these space objects. Space objects are no longer objects that will stay in outer space for the rest of their lives and dissipate over there. We now have reusable vehicles. These vehicles are used in aerospace transportation systems for space tourism, taking people to outer space and bringing them back. So is that the launching in the literal sense? It is not, because we've got a dual purpose. Not the dual purpose as in the technologies, but here we've got a vehicle that can not only transfer through airspace as a plane, but it can also be used in outer space as a space object. And then it returns back to Earth. It does not need the rocket launching facilities in the traditional way. It simply moves from an airport, like a civilian airport. So the launching aspect we need to engage. Even though it's not defined in the Act, we modify it. Therefore, we can be able to regulate. There's a whole lot of other issues as well. There's some definitions that I've obtained in here that I will not bore the members with. Those are just the two examples. Now, any Act must actually define exactly where and how it applies. That is the kind of scope of application. What does it really regulate? That is not defined in the present Act. The present Act does not define what Space Affairs Act should apply to. It only says in Section 11 that this council that has been established must not license trade activities. There's a need for a good legislation on the first paragraph, on the first part, to say this Act applies to this is the issue that you are raising on that slide. We must clearly define that the outer space affairs act applies to first the launch of outer space of objects into outer space, the operation and control of space objects whilst in outer space. The section C is going to be a very controversial one, the design and manufacture of space objects. That is not an outer space activity. That is an activity that takes place at a factory here on Earth. That's now the Space Council have jurisdiction on matters that are taking place on Earth surface. But
what we're looking at, advocate, is closing off the presentation within the next 15 minutes, so you have some idea of how much time. Are we on page 11 now?
We are now on page 10, 11, 13. We can simply manage
meanwhile, but just keep that in mind.
We'll do that as fast as we can. Just to show you the lack of depth in terms of our current act as we're applying not only in the review process, but also in the developing and deployment of new activities. So the other element that needs to be clearly defined, authorization and licensing. We must define exactly what the Space Council is, where its powers derive from, and how is it going to achieve its objects. In that sphere, we are on page on slide 11. There's a need now to define exactly what kind of licenses and permits will be issued for the conduct of space activities in the country. And we suggest that we need to have a clear definition of space launch license. That we must now look at the space facilities license. We must look at those reusable space objects and under what condition a control re-entry should be, and we must provide a license for that. Then we are required under those international obligations to continuously supervise the activities of these entities as they conduct space activities. The Cape Peninsula University of Technology has launched a mini-site, a very small CubeSat, and they've done the first 1 year in space. They've provided us with a report. The report tells us where the space object is presently, how is it functioning, is it, if it says that it will have difficulties in terms of safety, that's continuously supervising and ensuring that the licensees are now conducting their space activities in conformity with the Act as well as our international obligations. E on page 13, the safety and environmental considerations. Our Act does mention to a certain degree that the Council must look into the safety, the minimum safety standards when issuing a license. However, that does not really define what minimum safety standards are we talking about. Recently there has been international codes and guidelines on space mitigation issues, those deals with safety and technical standards. We must clearly incorporate some of those guidelines in the new legislation into how safe the operation of a space object should look like. Of utmost importance is the issue of liability and insurance. Remember, we said the states are responsible, the states are liable for any damage that may be caused by space objects whilst in route to outer space and even when the space object is in outer space. So we require as a council that anyone who launches a space object must have insurance. Now, as you could imagine, these are very intensely expensive activities. What kind of insurance is required? To come to a minimum of 65 million UK pounds to ensure one launch. So can the CPET afford that? So we must create a legislative regime whereby there could be classes of entities that are required to get so much liability insurance. Then the state response must come and indemnify some of these operators when they are conducting their operations. Those are the issues that will be in the bill, and we will be continuously engaging with the members here in respect to how best can the law assist the development of the space industry. Similarly, the other two ones, not very crucial, but required to be done. We need to register our space objects on the National Register and pass that information to the UN. And there's a the last one that is coming out now recently is that people buy satellites in operations. Now, if the satellite is definitely in South Africa and it's a South African satellite, but the operator in Mozambique wants to buy it, now those responsibilities under international trade law still remain in South Africa. So there need to be a contractual arrangement between the two to say now Mozambique has bought our satellite, we transfer all the responsibility to Mozambique. That needs to be clearly defined in the legislation. In short, our legislation requires a great overhaul. Technological developments have overpassed it, and we're in the process of reviewing it. Thank you very much.
I understand you still have another person making an input from the team, Dr. Moss.
Thank you, Nicholas. Well, there's a concluding slide which I think Advocate Sekula has effectively covered all the relevant points. So in the interest of time, what I'd like to do is to leave that slide for your consideration, but to alert you to two upcoming space events that I believe would be of interest to the honourable members here. The first is the International Astronautical Congress, which will take place from the 12th to the 16th of October in Jerusalem this year. This Congress is the world's premier event at which all the space agencies and indeed regulatory authorities, industries, etc., get together to discuss the sorts of questions that Advocate Sekula was referring to in his presentation. And an important event for South Africa to be participating in, and indeed a number of South Africans do participate in this event. But we are bringing this to your attention because this event has associated with it an activity specifically aimed at parliamentarians. And since 2008, if I recall correctly, our parliament was represented in these parliamentary events. I'm not aware of whether the members here know that this Congress is taking place in October, but I think it would be a very good opportunity, especially now that we are reviewing the Act, for parliamentarians to be aware of this event and perhaps to consider attending. We had, a few years ago, the South African Parliament was represented. I think at least three portfolio committees were represented: trade and industry, science and technology, and then rural development and land reform. So this was a very good opportunity. The second event that is shown on that slide is the an upcoming United Nations South Africa Symposium on Basic Space Technology, which will be taking place at the University of Cape Town in early September. And this is an event which is being hosted by the Department of Science and Technology on behalf of South Africa, with inputs from the DTI and the Space Agency as well. And this symposium will concentrate on the benefits of small satellites. And again, I think that this may be of interest to the honourable members, and we will keep the honourable chairs of this committee apprised of the developments around these two events.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martinez. Ms. Majanja?
We have something going by the contact team. Mr. Dow. Mr. Dow has not.
Okay. I didn't hear where he was from, but I know your voice is challenged. Science and technology, is it? Okay. Right. Thank you very much for joining us at this presentation and also engagement. I must say, for members who are not aware of it, we very seldom have the opportunity to engage with these space people, as it were, and yet it is a very important piece of legislation, and it's also one that is due this year. I mean, they started on the policy and it's been coming for some time, so it's a good opportunity for us to give them the space, so that when the legislation comes, we're fully aware of it. But before I carry on and on. If those prefer to the seminar, we will come to that, the congress, at the end of the presentation. Let's rather, I want to hand over to my fellow chair, co-chair, this is a joint meeting, and that's Honourable Dr. Gokwana, to actually chair the session of the engagement between members, just exercising their voices, comments, and questions. I'm going to hand over to yourself now, Dr. Gokwana.
Thank you so much.
Because of innovations. So if we can be patient in that and make sure that everybody understands, including us as parliamentarians, we are here to make laws. But in making those laws, some of us ran away from science because we are certain different. Yet, whatever we are talking about here is about science. So, that's why I'm calling for honesty in practicality. Especially when it comes to that one purpose that we are doing. It's very serious. It might sound mild, but you can imagine it that there can be one person who can switch off everything and we all do it. That's one person. Because of knowing science, can that do something and kill the whole world, if not kill the whole country, if not the whole world? The other part that becomes really interesting is that without having boundaries, we've got countries that are within ourselves, that depend on us, which we need to consider whenever we're doing this. And now we're talking about amending laws and adding certain things because life is dynamic and we depend on you to help us, even with the countries that are within our boundaries. You're listening to your son, your sister. How to deal with those in making people so that we don't forget, because there are no boundaries, there are no, in the space there are no boundaries, we just together in this space. So I just wanted to make a comment, so remember that I just comment, I don't want any answers from that. I saw I must not know, but don't take me back to when I don't know some of the members of TTI. But I'll try and remember the name, but I know the science and technology. I saw your hand first, and then I'm going to follow with Williams. Okay, you can start, my name.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you. And thank you to the other chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Mine is very short. I just wanted to know the rationale why this bifacta belongs to the GPI and not to the ST. Because all the indication and the acts and the treaties, I'm sure that it belongs to the ST. Because I'm just wondering if this particular arrangement, doesn't it cause tensions? Because sometimes such arrangements can appear to say, you know, we're supposed to be doing this now, it's in the TTI and things like that. Secondly, I think welcome the, I wanted to also say, when I look at the IDO community, the things, there's more members from TSG than TTI. So hence my question. But also the bill, I think it's welcome, the amendments to the act. And the areas that have been put out for amendments are also interesting. But it will also be interesting when the public hearings are scheduled. There's also provision for public education because this is not an easy subject. So if you have to take it, if you say you bring public education or public health and the public must be involved, then they might be proceeded to public education. So I just want to know if there is that provision or if not, I think it should be something that needs to be taken into account. I will stop the other issues, the other chapters that you've given and make a
thanks. Thank you, Marina. I forgot to thank you, Dr. Martinez, and Queen Manjaj, the Rain Queen. I think we need support to Seven Jalas, not Sakura. It's easier to say Seven Jalas. Okay, thank you very much. I'm not sure, Nick, whether it was you or it was Honorable Williams. Or do we consider age or do we consider... Or let's consider... let's ask Honorable Williams and come to you, Nick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got three questions. Firstly, I just want to know what the difference between the South African Council for Space Affairs
and the South African National Space Agency, what the two agencies, just the difference between them. My next question is about the military application of space technologies. I just want to know who would define what military application is, because it could be offensive or defensive. And some of the defensive applications could be, for instance, real-time images, terrestrial images, and would you be stopped from doing that because people call that that defensive application? So I just want to know who would define what those military applications are. And my last question is, does the council look into transformation when it's giving out licenses to the private sector? For instance, in the long term, it could be nice if, and also ideal, if the industry around space in South Africa was transformed, black owned. So I'd like to know whether or not it is going in that direction, or is it at the moment white owned? And is, in which direction is it going in? What criteria do you put in place to issue those licenses?
Thank you, Honorable. Yes, Honorable Nick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see that in the act or the proposed legislation is that the Secretariat will be strengthened. Now, was there any costs to that, or do you hope to recover the costs for licensing fees? That's the first question. Secondly, if you look at all the four treaties South Africa are party to, is there any major countries in the world that are not parties to these treaties? Like, for instance, United Kingdom, Russia, India, Brazil, or are the major countries part of that? And then finally, David Cameron was saying earlier this year that the United Kingdom needs legislation to close the so-called safe space where people can talk to each other without being picked up. Is there anything in the new legislation to look at that? And is that a concern also for South Africa?
Okay, thank you very much, Nick. Can we go to, I think it's Honorable Kongi. I saw, was there a hand at the press? Oh, okay. Answer.
Thank you, Chair. Just two short questions. I don't know whether I heard you correctly. You were saying this act cannot be amended. It must be completely withdrawn. Why? Just to the reasons for that. Secondly, on transformation, because this is what most of the things is what we, and then as you alluded, taking our background, and as the chair has said, is quite a complicated subject, and yet interested, and yet one of the key areas for our lives and development, also in the country. Under your agency, do you have any programs that talk to development and supporting those who want to come in who have never been in this area at all? If I don't remember, just if you can just how big is your budget? If you get any budget or grant from the DGI, or both DGI and science technology. I want just to check out what the way, I'm sure, in this area we are competing against, as you said, from an area that we have big powers who have been in this donating the space for a long time. And here in Africa, you mentioned Nigeria, Algeria, and compared to those, where are we as South Africans compared to both African countries and the big international players on space? Thank you,
Honorable. I think what? The point is, I don't want to misquote For me, this is a place that we want to have a bed. It's what life is dynamic. And it being dynamic, unfortunately in South Africa, we can't run away from our history. That was only less than 40 million that were involved mainly in science in wines and house. The other feared it and said, no, this is not where we're going to come. And now we've got to make laws that are going to look at that dynamism in the future. And it's going to be done by us. Who are some of us that come from that background? Now, how do we make sure in the future, if those that are not involved in this are going to be part of it? Because if the government of the people fight the people for the government of the people fight the people for the people. And we are thinking if we make this law, we are making it based on the fact that it's the people's idea. It's not an individual idea. But most of the people don't know some of this. And they ran away from that. And they have to run out because they think that it's a difficult plan. Honorable Mandasha, and I think after that, one of them will answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have one question. I've seen in some other funds when regulations are crafted, they are not at all kind of waterproof. And entities and companies would flout their regulations and bank on the fact that they will be able to make energy. In this case, how are you going to ensure that the tenants that will go on the non-compliance, as you have said in your slide 11, that conducting of any space activities without prior authorization is an offense? And of course, I don't know what the sanctions are currently. Do you have an intention to make your drafting water types change?
Thank you, Mankind. Honorable Albert, excuse me, in your water. You don't have to imagine what was happening over the weekend.
Thank you, Chairperson. I finished drinking my water. I would just like to ask three questions. The first one relates to the bill itself. And I would like to know, is the bill based on international best practice? What type of model legislation, if any, are used? And also, within the world trend, international trend, to make sure that commercialization of space activities are given enough space and becomes part of one's economic growth, how will the bill actually deal with that issue? Secondly, the bill will be tabled to relevant bodies. I would like to know who those relevant bodies will be, and also whether South Africa's few companies that actually deal with space products will also be directly contacted in this regard, or will they just be informed that there will be a public consultation process? that's all for now. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Chair wants to ask a question.
Chairperson. Just a few things. There was a reference, I think, to the 2011 Act, Liability, etc., which had been, treaty for ratification. And I remember at the time the issue of insurance and the responsibility of us with respect to these goods. I think it's pertinent for us just to get that summarized again, because I know one of our concerns at the time, I mean, this could be an enormous cost. How do we manage that cost, etc.? That was number one. And then the other issue, which is just a comment, is, we had said at the time, in fact, 2009, 2010, it'd be great if more people could be working on these things. And I must say, Commissioner, I welcome the fact that we've got not just science and technology and TTI, but DERCO, DOD, all of the people that were and are and should be directly involved. And you haven't achieved that. So it certainly makes me think that we should look at that as committees as well to get out of that approach even one or two committees in this regard. But thank you. Thank you.
There was an informal conversation here about the last one slide that the conference in Israel we will have to mandate the DA because the ANC will not be given a visa to go there, you know.
Okay. No, you don't have to answer that. What makes you ready to intend the general which honor to share that country that you, your brains are too big so they can keep all the presenters. So we hope that you have everything that they will say and you'll respond to all of it. At least you've got two inside here. The brain is still going to be able to direct everything. Okay, Dr. President, now you can respond to that because I don't see any head coming from the members.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members, for some very, very good questions. And of course, as always with good questions, one does not always have the answers. That is part of the guidance that we are seeking from you here today. So I wrote down, I think it was some 13 questions, and I will attempt to answer some of them, and then with your permission, Chair, to pass the podium to my colleagues here to perhaps deal with the questions that I then respond to or to amplify the comments that I may make shortly. So I think let me perhaps deal with the first two questions that, first two series of questions that were addressed, which was the difference between the Space Council and the Space Agency, and also the question about why SATA currently falls under the DTI and not DST, and the question of how this relationship works and whether or not there are tensions. So let me begin first with the distinction between the Council and the Agency. Put very simply, the Space Agency is the national implementing entity of space activities in South Africa. It is a full agency of government with a large complement of staff, with several centers, operation centers. The agency falls under the Department of Science and Technology and is funded by the DST, and I'm sure that if there are more questions about it, Mr. Mudar from DST is here can perhaps address those. But that's the end of the implementation. Space activities, according to our international obligations, have to be subject to authorization and supervision. And that is the role of the Council. Council is a statutory council comprising a number of members appointed under current legislation, appointed by the Minister of Trade and Industry. It's not an agency of government, it's just a statutory council, and it considers these questions of licensing, regulation, etc. Now, it's important to understand that space activities are not all carried out by the Space Agency. As I said in my opening remarks, the space arena is growing increasingly diverse. We're seeing more space actors, companies, universities, even in some cases private individuals, although that's not the case yet in South Africa. So it's important that the regulator is more all-encompassing than just licensing the activities of a state entity. Now, the placement, as to the placement under the Department of Trade and Industry, we have considered this question, and we think that it's, the Council believes that this is an appropriate placement because of the various issues that we've spoken about in terms of the technology safeguards, technology transfer, dual use, all these kinds of issues. We are much broader than questions of science and technology. And the Department of Trade and Industry has extensive experience, regulatory experience, in these domains. Does it create a complexity? Yes, it does. As with any cooperative governance issue where an area of activity cuts across the functions and mandates of several departments,
it does create a complexity, but we believe that the cooperative governance approach is a very productive way forward. And I should add that on the international level, South Africa is sometimes referred to as an example that other developing space nations can consider, rather than following the Cold War, traditional Cold War model of space activities, which, you know, such as was demonstrated by the United States or the European countries or Soviet Union in the early days. So yes, it does cause complexity, but this can be addressed. And a year or so ago, the Department of Clean Industry and the Department of Science and Technology negotiated a protocol on cooperative space governance. And in fact, this protocol could serve as a model for bringing in additional departments, such as, for example, defense, communication, transportation. You see, space is so cross-cutting that this cooperative governance approach, we believe, really is appropriate. If I can then move on to the transformation question, some very, very good questions. How can our legislation address questions of transformation to ensure that the industry is transformed? Very good question. I know that there are initiatives of the DDI and DSE that are attempting to address some of these issues. How one links that to the legislation, very good point. I don't think we have an answer to that right now, but certainly I think fruitful thought as we take this process forward, and we very much appreciate that guidance. If I can then address the issue of the secretariat and whether the costing a costing exercise was done for the strengthening of the secretariat. Indeed, that is the case. We put in a business plan for the Space Council from year to year, and this idea of strengthening the secretariat has been costed. Again, to emphasize that for the regulatory function, we're not talking about an agency of government, we're talking about something at the level of a directorate. So really quite a small entity within government. And we believe that a well-staffed, well-resourced directorate would be capable of dealing with all of the demands, regulatory demands, for the foreseeable future. There was a question about where South Africa is vis-a-vis the other major space actors and the other countries in Africa. Well, clearly, if one compares South Africa to the major space actors, we are very hard on the ranking. I can show the honourable members a chart of that was done by the OECD of space budgets, and South Africa doesn't even appear on that. The United States, just to give you an idea, the United States invests more in space than the entire rest of the world put together, and we are a minor player by comparison. But on the African scene, we are a significant player. And although there are significant space partners in Africa, particularly in Nigeria, Algeria, Egypt, Kenya, the difference is that in South Africa, our capability is largely homegrown. We have not acquired our satellites by purchasing them from overseas providers, but we have an industry that is capable of supplying much of the technology in our satellites, and perhaps our colleague from DST may elaborate on those capabilities. So we do have some industry capability that we should very much nurture. There was a very good question about about space and the possible connection of this with space legislation. I think, of course, we're all concerned about this. This is really comes touching on what the cybersecurity, but a very pertinent question, because increasingly space security and cybersecurity are becoming intertwined. And this is an issue that we will need to take into further consideration. And again, one of those cooperative governance issues. There was a question about why the Act should be rewritten rather than amended. I'm not being a lawyer by profession, perhaps I should leave that to our legal colleague to address that one.
And how to the question, a very pertinent question in terms of the lawmaking process, how to ensure that legislators really understand what it is that is being legislated. And I'm delighted to learn that the honourable members wish to engage with the substance of this in a really detailed way. And what we can say from our side is that we would be very, very happy to arrange seminars, information sessions where we can explain this in a relaxed way to the honourable member that may be interested to get some additional background information. To use a rather tired cliche, really, it's not rocket science. We can explain this in ways that people can understand very easily. And I'm sure that with our DST colleagues, we could arrange appropriate information sessions. Concerning the question about penalties, also a very good question. The current legislation does, in fact, make provision for penalties, but it's 20 years old, and of course, we need to ensure that the new legislation will have penalties that are an effective deterrent and not something that could be ignored by entities with sufficiently deep pockets. Concerning the question about whether the bill is based, the proposed amendments are based on international best practices, we're happy to say that very much so. We, through a fortuitous coincidence of timing, the United Nations completed just a year ago a very extensive study of national legislation, and so that provides a rich fund that we can refer to in terms of recommendations for national legislation. So perhaps I should stop there, and with the permission of the chair, to invite my colleagues to address these and other questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Martinez. I'll make sure that if somebody comes here and asks for permission, they mustn't do that. They're very good in this. I'm not in permission. So they must think that they're not in permission. But okay, advocate, very good.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If regard this head to the sequence of the questions that have been asked, the issue of the dichotomy between SACSA and SAMHSA and where it resides, I think our colleague from DST can also make some additions to that. I will deal with the other legislative matters there. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, apologies for being a bit late. My calendar was not at day church. Thank you. I would like to point to the fact that when you started Chairperson, also mentioned that we as engineers and scientists that we have to provide you with technical input, technical advice, of course based on the principles of honesty and integrity. So I think that's a very critical point that you made there. Because whatever decisions, whatever inputs that we make here for this law, for this policy, would have a far-carrying and significant impact to the future of the country. The issue of dual-use technology or dual-purpose technology, we have also, as we made our inputs within the working group and the other committee, thought that this is quite critical for country, because we have to look in the best interest of the country, like a developing country, to say what aspects should we consider when we define what dual-use technology is. And this has to be done obviously in close cooperation with the Department of Defense, because for all space programs anywhere in the world, you would see that its origins really has been from the military point of view. And the point that was made about defensive and offensive, that's very critical. that we do not just see space as we look at the definition of the military side, that it's just for defensive or for offensive purposes. But we can give you an example of the global positioning system, which was built by the U.S. military. Some people defense purposes, and at the end you would see what the civilian benefits have been derived there in terms of the commercial interest and so on. So that's one point that I wanted us to just, as we bring in the input, the technical or technocrat that the House should be aware of. The issue of such sons, whether DGI or DST, it does come quite a few times. We've had discussions in the past on the differences and where this should be hosted, and where this should be separated and so on. Of course, Dr. Martin has indicated that it could be one of the more other upcoming space nations should look at. But perhaps, honorable members, we need to seriously look at this issue. There has been an issue of budget. There has been an issue of commercialization of space technologies. There have been issues of transformation of human capital development. How do we then, with this current model, try and address some of those issues? And these are some of the critical issues that I think as we look at finalizing the Act itself, that I mean the Act should clearly define, if we keep the status quo, it has to be very clear in terms of where the resource of the resources, the mobilization of resources to ensure that indeed as we look at building indigenous, which is our advantage in South Africa, that we're not buying off the shelf and most of the space components or subsystems that we're using to build our satellites astray. How do we further? Because this Act for us, the critical part is to ensure that it promotes research and development within the country, coupled with industrial development where we will create jobs and grow our economy. And that should be the object of this strategy, sort of this policy we have. So how do we ensure that if we keep SACS as the DGI, as part of the implementation, that you know there are resources made available so that we can address some of the societal challenges that we face in our country. And those are some of the points that I think as we further engage with the GDI, of course, activating the cooperative governance, the protocol that we have signed, that we need to honestly and address some of the challenges that are posed by the current setup or the current model and so on. There was a question about where we are, particularly in Africa. It is true that the Nigerians and Algerians are already investing quite a bit compared to us. If we look at the budget of SANSA and not really look at the budget that DGI is posing as far as the implementation of space is concerned, is that they are investing quite a lot. Nigeria has a communication satellite. They have two operational satellites as we speak. The Algerians have just launched Algerian Set 2. But the good news is that we are talking tonight to Algeria to look at the co-development of the future satellite for the African Resource Constellation Monitoring. But in terms of the indigenous technological capability, we are way ahead of some of African counterparts. We need to use that as a competitive advantage so that our industries can capture certain global niche, African niche markets where we can also further stimulate our industries in South Africa. The last part on the commercialization that is critical. that if this act would not create an environment where we can stimulate industrial development, then we would have failed. And the main objective of any state program is to ensure that you know, there's economic growth and there's industrial development in any nation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As for the Zoom server, I think we don't have enough time, but we'll leave you to make a comment. But one thing that I want to make a comment on is that when you look at people and you find that they've got a gap, which has caused some fights as well, when they've got a gap, it means the brain is bigger than the other people. So that a gap in disease. So they're more brilliant than those who are not. So you have not surprised that. In your comments, we seem to get in all this and the film that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This issue of structure and transfer, really, I think that there needs to be a greater element of honesty among the technocrats presenting to this parliament. I'm an outsider. I'm an independent person, but coming from an outside, looking at the inside, it has basically paralyzed the development of space program in this country. That there is so much inconsistency, just not so much people coming together and talking and working towards the realization of the goals that's contained in the space strategy as well as the space policy. It is very, very, very more deeply ingrained and more divisive than that it appears to be at the moment. So, I'm not even sure when we live here that we will be able to tackle that legislatively unless there's an honest approach by the two departments to concretely deal with this matter for the achievement of the objectives of the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Vera. I think even without Queen Madati talking, so we'll just call it a day. Thank you very much, Dr. Martinez, for the presentation and all the presentation. All I was trying to say, you administered honorable now, but you are not honorable since I was thinking people have got a gap in their decision. The brain is bigger, it's more brilliant than the others. I'm not saying it's because of what a gap, so I'm one of those jurors. Oh, you want to say something before we summon? We've got 2 minutes.
Yes, I'll take 1 second. One of the questions which I think probably was not it has on the population and the issues around whether the council has been admitted. Since Dr. Martina has already mentioned that the SACSA has a small target which we are understanding at the level of the average going forward. All the other issues that have to deal with the transmission are going to be brought across the nation, not only for the state, for the innovation, for the community, for closing the deficit. We have a number of interventions within the society whereby we try and deal with cross-cutting issues for the industry, for the transmission, for job creation. We've got the VE code now. We've got a number of incentives that we have that are deployed across all the industries, not only this one. There's the Black Industrial Incentive Program that also is in plan and will be actually launched in the near future. So by so saying, I'm trying to say it's not necessarily the role of the council to do that. Since the council is within the CCI, take care of that. And we also have a specially developed program for the aerospace industry, which is based in Nigeria. But I must say, there must be more that should be done because it's not enough to be done, or it's not enough to be done at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we just finished at 1:45. I'm just summarizing. I'm hoping that there are no more questions that are going to be coming. But before I do that, let's thank you very much, Queen Majaji, Dr. Martinez, Dr. Tebu Dano, and Mr. Ndau, for your presentation. Thank you, reference members. Would we accept your amendment? And we are hoping that your some of those patriotic members of South Africa, where your country is before everything, because some of the things are very serious and they need consensus. People with integrity. So we're hoping that.
Honorable Chair, we have got a suggestion that the parliamentary, the honorable member, must constitute a small committee on space life that will be able to engage with the industry to a great extent and we are able to provide you input as opposed to waiting for a joint meeting or addressing one portfolio committee that the structure will be an enduring one that can bias with us. Thank you.
Okay, I think I know that. So we accept your amendment and we hope that they will give us the technical skill to understand what is going on. I think this part of transformation is not, the thing is not pointing at you. It's actually pointing at us more than anything, because all we need to do is to remove that myth that science is a difficult thing. Understanding some of the technical things is difficult. Because science is just about why and how, that's all. And but we've been made to believe that it's a very difficult thing. That was for a certain purpose that it was done that way. Now, the members of parliament themselves are the ones who are supposed to make sure that from youth, people should be inquisitive and asking questions. Why is it happening like this? Unlike what our chief usually says, when I'm in my rural area in Juno and I see an aeroplane flying, what I usually say, give me Songa, God is Songa. Whereas the other ones that were given an opportunity, they are asking themselves, why is that plane being able to fly there with gravity pulling it down? But it's like that, why is it doing that? So this is what we need to do as parliamentarians. And this is going to be easy. We just have to remove that thing. But there's another thing that we need to help you as parliamentarians. You are playing in a global space. And we cannot claim that we are going to, we're held up with the resources. We've got to compete even with the resources. We can't say we don't have money to do this and that. We just have to commit with the world as far as this one. And if that is not happening, as you were telling us, tell us so that as parliamentarians we can lobby and say, no, if you want to do this, make sure that you human resources are there, financial resources are there, so that we can commit with the world and not say, no, what a developing country. Well, we're not a developing country when it comes to the outer space. We just have to have the solution. As far as the symposium, we definitely would want to go, and that we're going to be learning as members of parliament. So Shepherd has been forcing me to say, tell your members to agree that we go, and we have to ask those in authority to give us money to go there. We've got to learn. We've got to know what's happening. So thank everybody that has been here. And I said, you don't have to ask Dr. McNeil about anything. He doesn't open his mouth, but ask him about space. What's happening to a credit card? He will tell you. But you won't know about the tension and the pneumonia. You don't have to ask me to I don't know, I've forgotten. Okay.
Lord Chairperson, I'm trying to analyze what you are saying about you. That youth should be more inclusive. And because of our background, some of us were not provided with an opportunity. So I'm seeing, talking to another matter. I was asking myself about the weight of a car. I was saying very young. I know the car is very light. That it is. I think I was 5 years old. When it was about to move, I put my feet underneath that. I had a excruciating pain for an answer. So I knew after that there's an inch in the car that made it to be very heavy. That you can't just put yourself on it. So we let in a more challenging way sometimes. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, let's just give a hand. Yeah. Thank you. But more important, I really want to thank Honourable Chairperson of Science and Technology, Dr. Bevan Gokwana, for agreeing to find a space so that we could do this together, because it simply cannot be done by one or the other. We do need to, and we do need to maybe consider expanding it a bit. But what we need is that someone from the committee here just to put forward, we made a proposal, we think it is a good idea to attend the International Astronautical Congress and so on. And can we just have a proposal from the committee endorsing that, please? Honourable Albert? Yeah. And seconded? Yeah. Lots of hands. I'll take Science and Technology, the whip there, Honourable Nandini Maseko. And thank you very much for being here with us. May we just say that the custom has become, since I came, and that it's not just trade and industry, it's been DSTI, but it's also been from time to time another committee relevant to the theme. One said it was rural development, it could be telecommunications, whatever. So we'll see through the chair of chairs, the Honourable Frohlich, what would be the best one to take along in that respect. But I really want to thank members of Science and Technology. And I want to thank you, Honourable Gokwana, for actually, you know, realizing that we can't separate industry and science and industry. Industrialists recognizing we can't just manufacture. We need to know what's going on. And we need to stop the silo principle that is invading Parliament. So on that note, I want to thank Marco Chief. Yeah, thank you very much, Colin. And we've got a short tea break of 10 minutes before we go on to the budget. Thank you.
You should wait for invitation for the marriage. That's on the front of marriage. We're still looking for a ring.
Now we're moving quite speedily into the next phase.
I'd like everyone to take out the budget, please vote 34, but also to check with the secretariat whether they received any last minute input from any other party.
Chairperson, we received an email from Honourable McPherson, but he will raise the matter during the process of discussion.
Well, not if he's not here. So, that's why I've asked him to be located. Right. Thank you very much. Now we're looking at, this is the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on Budget Vote 34. We'd like to share the joke. And then we'll put the final date on. There it is. You've got that page one there. If I don't see a hand, I will assume you don't have a problem. All right? Look, yes, Honourable Shumble.
Thank you. I could have missed it before, but I think we need to look closely to the impact of the natural incentives program.
Talking to the mic or move that mic a little bit, please.
Now, I think that we need to look closely to the industrial incentives programs and the subsidies which trade and industry get on other sectors. What is the impact? How much money does government spend on the automotive industry, on other sectors that we subsidize them? Is it deriving value for the money which the state is spending on those sectors? So that we're able to give guidance on the extent of amount which can be expended on those sectors. I don't know if that has been captured before, but maybe we need a report on what the trade industry subsidized and what value are we getting out of that. How many jobs are being created, what value is that bringing to the economy, and a variety of other indications from there. And because maybe subsidizing people for profit purposes and it's not assisting the economy whatsoever. So we need to look into the details of that aspect, because I think it's one of the major expenditures of DTI.
Yes, we call that incentives. Incentives are major, as you say, they're more than 65% or so on. Now, there has been an expansion. This came up the other day. That has been expanded. There may be, as we move through the report, to add to it in the form of a matrix, you know, what's going to what. So let's just take that one. Everyone on board there? Honourable Mkongi?
No, Chairperson, I think we can easily claim that. If you go to page 9.
Right.
Yeah, page 9 speaks about the comparative expenditure of the program for 2014, 2015, and then 2016, 2016. And then, as we have this graph, we can have a graph underneath the without explanation that expert incentives and the trend of increments.
Yeah.
And then how many for how much and what degree. We can have it on that one, and then I saw another one. It's on page 14. First page 9,
yeah.
Then the graph there. So you can interpret the graph through producing other graphs, paying incentive. And then the second one is page 13 and page 14.
Yeah.
Page 13 is talking about budget allocations for the 2015 financial year. And then we can have explanatory notes there on what we have achieved in terms of the incentive, or what do we intend to achieve. In order for us, when we come back next year, we can say these are the issues.
Yes, of course, not even next year. In the BRRR process, it's this year. I know what you mean, Honourable Mkongi. So those two linked together, we're saying to just step out a bit more on the incentives by way of a matrix, a graph,
Igila, Pai, or whatever. And so that is very, very clear, because that's the bulk of the program. And I think the report does recognize, I forget the exact page, you know, where that point is made. Then I'm going to page 2. Of course, I don't mind if people want to immediately say something on a specific page, but it would be healthier if we move systematically. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. I don't think yours has come up yet, Honourable McPherson. Page 6. I often wondered with that phrase, Patisa, I used to think it was Pagamisa. So, who's the natural language is Zulu? So, you don't say Pagamisa. When you say to someone, lift up something, you say Patisa. No, no, that's someone, oh no, my gosh. Just clarify that for me. Thank you very much. It's nothing like incorporating a little bit of language learning. There we are, like you said, speed up. In page 6, as we said, there's something on SADC. Did anyone see that in the news recently? I hope you followed it. Page 7. You notice we put in the Global Exporter Passport Program that you asked for. Page 8. Page 9. There's just one thing I was going to ask staff, a technical thing. On the graph here, the bar chart, maybe just make sure that's not grey the writing, but black. I think it seems to be a grey, you know, in the actual chart area. And then we move to, okay, who was it? Yeah, Honourable Economy.
I think describe on the whole as an organization, so there must be coordination on the incentive development administration in relation to administration. In the last meeting, it was the money.
Good morning, members. I think, Ms. Nkoli, if I understand correctly, you wanted an explanation between administration and incentive administration. Administration deals with the running, the day-to-day running of the department, while incentive, because you can see that it's a bigger budget, it deals with the giving of incentives. All the incentives that the department gives are under incentive development and administration. That does not deal with administrative functions. It's incentives. But that's what the program is called.
Thank you.
Continue with that. It's the transfer. During that, you administer the funds going out of DTI, but it's not the regular administration. And I'm glad that you've raised the question again, because this report is not just us. Yes, Honourable and colleague.
Yeah, I wanted to make a follow-up on that, Master, because if you still remember, my articulation is Honourable Kalago, who gave an agreement for you to separate. Because what I was arguing, I was saying that the incentive development and administration has is the administration of the agents. Is that correct?
Honourable Kondi, it's the administrative part of the incentive, not of the entities.
That's dealing purely with the funds per se going out. And I mean that we must understand ourselves what we mean. 10. Page 10. And then page 11. Page 11 at the bottom there. The Black Industrialist Program with its 1 billion now, isn't it? that, yes, it is mentioned. Page 12. The issue of verification was raised. Did we clarify that completely? The auditor issue. Do you remember? Yeah, did we clarify that? No, because I'm looking here, where it says the, where is it? Auditors. In addition, the independent regulator approves that. I think the thing is, I ask the question, has that act been amended? Because it's not ended by us. And I keep on, no, we must be absolutely certain, because we did need, we asked for the amendment of that, or pointed to the fact that because of the relationship, they may require an amendment. Did you remember that, Ms. Sheldon? The clarification in simple terms is that there is a continuing engagement between National Treasury and trade and industry as to how much of this should be compulsory and how much should remain as it is flexible. So that's, we remain in the same position as last year on that one or the previous term. Page 13. Who was that? Yes, Honourable Nkongi.
I'm not sure whether we're going to review some of our proposals on this report. Let's say the PPPR assessment process only, because there are lots of suggestions that are around the question of the verification. The DI proposed that the EU was dealing with anti-corporate threat packages that are defrauding the process. Whether we need to have those answers now or we're going to have the later. Because there are many things that have been said today that the DGI will be doing. One of the things that I wanted to circle is where to ask the question about the last week's business day reporting and the DE code and so forth. That was released the last week. There was an outcry from the broad-based black economic companies about the new guidelines that have been.
Well, maybe I should have started off with that. I did phone the minister in this regard. He was overseas at the time, as you may know. And he has agreed, and again he phoned this morning, to confirm that he will be here on the 19th, and he will deal with both of those. The reality is, if you remember, this is related to fronting, to try to get rid of all of the fronting. But I think it does require a further clarification for the committee. Okay. So we're going with the report as it is. We have no further information in this regard. And the Act hasn't changed. Page 13, page 14. Page 14. Yes, Honourable McPherson.
Sorry, Chair. I do apologise that I was asking you to answer the briefing on this, but I just want to clarify when can I raise specific, omissions that exist from the key issues raised by the committee during its deliberations under 6.1.2.
Still to come.
Well, no, we're on that now. It is to come. But I just want to know when you want me to raise that once you finish the briefing or when we get there.
No, you are to raise it now. This is what I'm saying. You know, we need to be able to raise these issues right now, you see, because at the end of this is why the report went out. We had done the bulk of this, but I did ask the committee secretary, would he please reminds parties their recommendations and conclusions should be in one, and to their comments on the report. Because we do have to get the report out now, you see. So read it as we're on the spot. Thanks. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16. Page 17. I'll take it. Honourable Maxson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see some clear omissions from the from deliberations that have been raised in the committee during the process of formulating this. Some of the omissions that I see is that there's no mention of the National Empowerment Fund. You'll recall one of the key recommendations of the last oversight visit that we did and agreed to by the committee and agreed in the report was the engagement between National Treasury and DTI to formulate that investment fund. There's no discussion in any of this. There's also no discussion about, and we've deliberated at length around the National Gambling Board and the problems that exist there, and also to the extent the engagement that we have with the MEC for Finance from Canada. So I'm just concerned about those two particular emissions that have been deliberated on by this committee and should be, in fact, in this report.
We carried some of that in the oversight report. And then the balance, as I say, you're referring to the NEF per se, there is one reference to it, but we didn't engage directly with the NEF. But where we collect all of that, the oversight, which is out, and you've had this fished out to you now, or process, and as we come into the BRRR process, we're going to have that coming up. We have had our comments on the gambling report, and I said then that we've got a bill on the table, that's the remote, where we need to tackle gambling as an issue, a major issue. We have to shift it for two or three reasons. Partly it would have put pressure on yourselves, but secondly, the fact that we wanted to finalise the transfer pricing. So it wasn't only the pressure, but the finalisation of something. So you can leave that in your reports, but we did have an oversight report, as you know. Thanks, Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Chair. You're quite correct that it was an oversight report. But I think that I would find it difficult to then understand how I could raise it in a recommendation, which will come at the end of the report. Yet, in fact, it doesn't exist in the report in the beginning. And it is something that I do believe needs to be raised in a recommendation, so therefore I would ask that it is inserted as a deliberation of the committee so that we can also then raise it as a recommendation at the end of the report. Thank you.
Yes, I'm just checking the recommendations. I don't see the recommendation. The point is I don't see the recommendation. So perhaps correct me, is it something you want to put in as a recommendation? Yeah.
Yes, Chairperson, it's quite correct. It is a recommendation that I do want to move from the committee to include in the report, but I can't do that if it doesn't exist if it's not in the report to begin with.
Let's flag that. That is a contribution of the DA in terms of recommendations, and quite rightly, if it has to be there, it should come in the body. So we're flagging it, it's not turned down. All right? Just getting to the end. And I see it here very well sorted out. When did we get this response? It's on the 8th. Okay, so before we go. Can I move to page 17? Just checking with members, page 17. I'm not sure why there's all that space, but that may be a reason for that. Page 18. Hang on, just a minute. Right, page 18. We're not only going to monitor this, we're going to monitor the whole of CRPC. So just saying this, we're going to monitor the whole agency or whatever would commission. Okay. All right. So just more one there. Page 19. Page 20. Page 20, Langoustines, eh? 20, page 21. Someone's got a hand or... Who coming? Page 21, no hands yet. Page 22. Is it actually called SI? Hello? Jessica, I'll come back to you in a minute, Honourable Mpongi. On page 22, the International System of Units, I asked for this to be confirmed. Is it the French name, SI? No, I'm not going unless I get a confirmation. What does the SI stand for? Institut or whatever, what is it? Please verify that. Okay. I saw Honourable Mpongi, your hand is going up. Honourable Mpongi?
I'm not sure the person what it will do, whether I want to put it on recommendations. The recapitulation project of NEMISA, we said we're going to deal with that when they give us the whole...
As a matter of fact, you're quite right, it is something that we indicated in the MTEF process. That we wouldn't ask for funding right now, but in the MTEF process we would review that. And already we've got three agencies who are under that review. I saw Honourable Mathiasen's hand. Now, Honourable Hilda, she's just taken off. Well, sure. Okay, we'll come back to him. All right, page 23. Oh, sorry, Honourable
Shibambu. There are also issues which are cross-cutting, which wanted to raise maybe afterwards, and it would allow you to do so.
Yes, we will. I just right now I'm trying to get, we lift this up, I've got a recommendation, and then we'll come in at the end. We're not going to adopt straight away, Honourable Shibambu. So you will give them that offer, unless you want to change it now.
No, we'll come at the end of
it. Yes. Page 23. Page, yeah, Honourable McPherson, you stepped out and I thought I'd see your hand, so I don't know. Honourable 24. Oh no, you'll be out of No, I'm not sure what that is, if it's just next year or what. Just about everything's become honourable now. 25. Right, now the conclusions, we've kind of cleaned them up and so on, and you were really required to ensure that we had covered all of the points that we've made here, okay? So if you look at energy, the black industrialists, you look at governance, remember we had a huge governance issue, and so on. You look at NEMISAs here, and so on, and the need, we don't want to compromise that mandate. Oh, I can't read that size. NRC is plays a critical role, yes. Then we're talking about NCR. Little or no risk. The committee has taken a position on what is this, the regulatory interventions, how do we avoid over indebtedness. And then in 10.9, the committee recognizes the financial constraints in the budget, national budget. However, it also understands the challenges you follow facing a number of entities. And this is going to have to really consume us during the BRRR process. And I propose we ask the budget office to also come and share with us some of the challenges that we may be up against. Acknowledgements. Yes, I do think we've got a good team. Recommendations. in consultation with the Minister of Finance, enforcing the preferential local procurement of goods by the public sector to encourage industrialization or deindustrialization and beneficiation drive. Increasing the financial resources in the national metrology due to its strategic importance, you see, now wait a minute, should consider. We put that under recommendations. The moment you put it under recommendations without a quality, oh, we said from the 2017, 2018, so we have said that. Enforcing rigorous governance practices and strengthening these issues. In consultation with energy, implementing measures such as the facilitation of the development of renewables to improve the energy mix and secure a more reliable supply of energy. Now, at this point, the question is, are there any other recommendations? You've just come with one there, Honourable McPherson. Do I have it in front of me?
Chairperson, it would be actually from the recommendation would be in line with the circular that was circulated to us. Yes. Yeah, that's it. In consultation with the Minister of Finance, pursue the NES motivation to establish a public-private venture capital fund which would be administered by the NES to enable further startup capital to be raised to fund applications for grants or projects / activities.
Yes, if you look at this, this is the status of the action the Minister confirms to us. We have taken this action. And according to the Minister, the NES has the capacity to attract more private sector funding. I'm just looking at the same thing, to develop both X and Y. Such provisions are already embedded in the BBBW Code of Good Practice. The private sector is also willing through the coast to contribute and ensure empowerment. In short, Minister's response, if you analyse it, is saying that, in fact, the private sector can come to the party, and it's one of the few agencies that has established a very good rapport with the public. I'm sure you and your colleague, the Honourable Hillius, were there 2 years ago or so, and you saw that yourself, because they do give a good return on these funding or loans or whatever. So, you know, I think you've got to consider it with what the Minister has said. That's what I'm saying. Honourable McPherson?
Thank you, Chairperson. What the Minister doesn't then answer is why the NES is so under-capitalized to fund entrepreneurs. And this proposal that I think that this committee certainly agreed to on the oversight reports, because that's what this is based on, acknowledges that funding for that entity and for entrepreneurs is challenging, and so that's why a specific named and an acknowledged fund between the public and private sector is so vital to allow the NES to deal with those specific challenges. And I think that should an establishment of a specific entrepreneurs fund administered by the NES, it would have very, very good application and results. And that's why I think that to actually package it like this in the budget, where we keep pushing that idea that a fund is central to actually doing it, I think it's important, and I really do ask that we consider adopting it as a recommendation of our budget.
Well, let's put it this way. Let me make it, and this is a proposal, members, you heard it. Now, what we can do is to put it to conclusion that there is this, and we can indicate what the Minister's response is. If we do want to take it through to a recommendation, we look at it for a review in the following year. Remember, we took a position, we're not asking for more money in this fixed, right, 2015-2016. So if we do, it has to be only considered in an outer year, you see. Honourable Mkongi?
I just want a clarification question. What could be the impact of this proposal to the entities or the functions that will be moved from the DGI into the small business group, but they will look at that because they can find a problem that this function is set to the small business group, but that's what clarity is included.
We've still got to fully unpack that because some of the incentives and various things are still shifting. Remember, there's a process here. But the other thing we should remember, which we sometimes we overlook, certainly I do from time to time, is 1 billion, which is ring-fenced to go to black business or black industrialists, the establishment. That's a fresh billion that's going in. And I think that that is something we haven't had for, which will address this. But I want to just be clear, and I'll have your final comment. We're not asking, we have this agreement, no request for funding in 2015-2016. If anything, we consider this during the BRRR process for 2017-2018. So, your final comment here on the McPherson.
That 1 billion rand is only going to affect 100 industrialists, if in fact that's what it does achieve at the end of the day, 100. A venture capital fund like this that has the backing of government and the public sector, and the private sector, can affect hundreds of thousands of entrepreneurs. That's where we need to go. And I mean, I'll just draw your attention to the wording as it is worded in here. In consultation with the Minister of Finance, pursue the NDF's motivation to establish the fund. We're not saying that money should be committed immediately to it, but that the establishment must be pursued between DTR and the NDF. But if it is not a recommendation of the budget, it's not going to happen with due respect. So that is why I think I would like to seriously motivate that it is a recommendation of this budget that the pursuing with the Minister of Finance and DTR does take place, so that we can then hold people responsible should that thing not happen if we agree that this has the potential to actually really empower thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Yeah. I think the whole point of the NDF was to encourage the private sector. Come to the party. Come to the party. Now, as I said before, we're not opposed to recapitalization where it's necessary. We are opposed to it for this financial year, and I hope I've made myself clear, because we took an in principle. So we could talk about a review of this issue, but the encouragement of the private sector to come to the party. The government comes to the party, it must choose. There must be a commitment on both sectors, and I don't think you disagree with that. So we're not disagreeing, Honourable McPherson. Right, Honourable Shimambu.
Thanks, Chair. Who's going to expand the 1 billion that? Who's going to administer it? And how do people apply to have access to? In terms of, because they see that the DFIs are going to work together to have a common approach. What is going to happen? A specific package is being developed for it. I want to have another DFI for black industrialists. Is the money going to be spread across the IDC, the NEF, the CFR, all those other companies? What's going to happen? Who's going to expend the 1 billion?
Honorable
Chivabu,
it's being held by IDC. However, like a lot of our funding, that's why IDC comes here from time to time. They hold certain funding that is utilized by the DTI. It is the specific purpose is black industrialists, the establishment of X number. And it may be pertinent, you raise the question, Honourable Shimambu, will my aunt be also inviting IDC perhaps later on in the year, in August, to get us a full report on this particular issue. Honourable Mkongi?
No, Comrade, Chairperson, I want to agree with you because I asked that question deliberately, the clarity speaking question, on the proposal from Honourable McPherson. You know, because there is other functions that are being administered under ITC, which will oppose today to be under the Department of Small Business Development. and it creates a problem there for them to implement their own program in the outer year of this mandate. So I'm asking that question very carefully of that capitalization, not impede on the program for the full establishment of the Department of Small Business. So that is why I was asking that. So if IDC can come in August, I'm satisfied. Well, these are the issues that are very important.
I hear you, and I want to come back to that. Let me just finish on the black industrialist issue. It's in the report on page 11, where you see the DFI referred to. Your largest DFI is IDC in this regard. But that is why I'm saying we don't have the space right now to come and call them in, but we do need to get them back, and we need to get, when the minister comes on the 19th, who are others, where's the funds being held? Is it on this issue, Honourable Shivambu? On the yeah, go ahead, Honourable Shivambu.
Look, if the 1 billion is going to be extended by the IDC, the IDC is supposed to report to the Department, the Ministry of Economic Development. So, what is the process? We allocate, so DTI appropriates the money from Parliament and then it takes it to a different section. And what becomes the accountability mechanism in that regard? Because also in his report, it says the DFIs. It doesn't speak only about the IDC. Who else is ultimately responsible for? I think there must be clear reporting lines in terms of, but of course there are political issues that have to be dealt with in terms of where does IDC report to, and what is their relationship to trading in that ministry and department? So it's all the political issues that must raise. Maybe the comments here, if not, we can raise it from our own individual perspective that IDC is misplaced and it should be given a different mandate altogether in terms of what should happen.
IDC does also report to us. The line function is DDD, the Department of Economic Development. But in respect of funds held, a lot of the funds held with IPAP, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, are held within the IDC. So they will be coming again more closer to August, September on an annual basis. The other issue is small business is getting some of these funds as well, but not all of the incentives have gone across, and we know that ourselves. That may well happen in the next year, 17 and 18. But just as you talk, and before we just get to here now, I'm flagging that, all right? Just let's know which DFR. There are a lot of development finance institutions. The biggest is, of course, the IDC, and we have a very strong relationship because if they report the DTI on these matters related to industrialization, which is this. So, coming back, I don't know, you made a point, Honourable Nkongi, in the light of the NEX. What I was saying earlier to the Honourable McPherson, I saw this as better placed under conclusion. This is not the first time we've asked for recapitalization, all right? But you will recall yourself, we just had to tighten them up a bit when we found that funds were not being used for the core areas and going to other areas, which we felt did not comply with its main mandate. You all recall that 2 years ago, or 18 months, 2 years ago. So now that it's tightened up, we were told in no uncertain terms, there's no funds to immediately go into the recapitalization. That we were told. So we were given that in this term. So having got that information and going into a very tight budget, we need to look at this responsibly and say, yes, if you think of what they can do, why don't we ask the private sector to come more and more to the party, while also agreeing we need to work towards the recap. But we are not going to. I want to make it clear, Honourable McPherson, there is an agreement with Treasury that they
are taking over this recapitalization negotiation. And that was done last year, before we even went on into elections for this term now. So that decision has not changed. What we can do is say we would like it reviewed, but we'd like to encourage the private sector to also come forward. Just before you, Honourable Macpherson, I heard the Honourable Shabambu, and then you're going to finish off. Yes.
So another issue with regards to this black enterprise is that the first sentence they implicitly speak about broad-based black economic empowerment and the codes of good practice. It looks like this bill then is going to be spent within that framework of giving money to black people to buy shares into existing companies. They want to have shareholder capitalist in existing industries, not new projects being initiated by people who will be categorized as black industrialists. It's a problematic approach if that is the case. We know what happened, let's say, in the mining sector. Like, the mining charter was passed 11 years ago, and the approach was that no one must have empowerment and participation. PIC signed billions of dollars buying shares on behalf of black people. And what happened, majority of them sold them back, and majority of them are not deriving any value out of it. And nothing changed about it. Well, what is the approach? Are we saying with this black industrialists are going to finance new projects, or we're going to have to finance shareholding by historically disadvantaged individuals? It's a conceptual issue which is not insignificant. It's a conceptual issue that must be dealt with and clarified before we throw money into the sea, which will not bring any additional value into the economy.
Thank you, Honourable Shivambu. I know it may sound cliche to say that the BBBE is dealing with that when we've already burnt our fingers on one of the clauses there. So I would say just cautiously, that is the intention of the BBBE. It is for us to identify where we are failing in this regard, because that is the intention. Now, I know we're working on something else which is already showing us that other legislation is related to this, that if it is not delivered on time, it has a negative impact on BBBE. But if we use it effectively, it can. So I want us to come back. I'm going to ask Honourable Kalaku to close off. Your last point, please, Honourable Macpherson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I keep hovering on this because I feel passionately about this. And I think that there's an opportunity for us as a committee, you know, to be quite resolute on something that's really important.
It's not the any if again.
Yes, it is any if.
No, make your closing comment because we're now going to the end.
I'm closing because I'm putting a formal proposal of a recommendation on the table, but I just need to elaborate on it. We need to ask ourselves, you know, when we get a document like this budget report, what is the point of the recommendations? The recommendations are there to ensure that the department does what we require it to do in a financial year. Whether it is the establishment of X or Y, or just to spend money in a particular fashion, that's what the point of the recommendations are. So why I ask that it is put as a recommendation, so that we can hold it accountable for doing what we agree is the correct thing. And you yourself have said it, you use the words that the issue with Treasury has been ongoing, but we still don't have anything on the recapitalization at the end of the day, because it's not a recommendation of this report. And if we can put it in black and white in the report that we believe that is a great way to go down, and certainly explore how we can have that done, that the private sector, which you and I both agree on, needs to come to the RT, and the public sector, which you and I both agree, to come in around a vehicle like this, then that is what we should be doing in the recommendation. So I formally do propose that it is a recommendation, and I ask that it be accepted by the committee.
We have heard that. I am asking the Whip, Honourable Kalaku, to make a final comment.
No, Chair, certainly I wanted to comment on what the Honourable personally, I don't think we have the problem. I agree. There's a recommendation. We can put that in the recommendations. It doesn't do any harm. In fact, even for us and social parliamentarians to pursue the implementation of that. I think we are clear on that. Except that, as you said, to emphasize what we've agreed, that we are not asking for more money in this budget. But to me, it doesn't stop us from putting this into the recommendations. Secondly, I think, as the Honorable Floyd has said, my understanding in this for this 1 billion, for this bank industry, maybe we might want to insert something there, because also I fear what is raised. This saying of would be give people money only to buy shares, it doesn't change anything. We might consider to formulate something in the recommendation that this money must really go to black industries in manufacturing, as it is saying here. You know, not people who, which it must encourage innovation, and people will come with new ideas to improve. Not just give it to people who go in and put in a sinking manufacturing company, they buy shares, and after that they forget about that. And they don't know what is happening. It won't help what we are trying. But I think it's clear here in the record. If you look, you read what is on page 7. It's clear what we are intending to do. So we might insert something which want to specify avoiding that in the recommendation.
Now, that is what we will do. And just for the record, and we can put this point in as well, is that the DFIs together, yes, that IDC is the main, you know, contributor. The NEF, the DEXA, you know, the Development Bank of South Africa, and FIFA. So all of these have the ring fence X, and it's from that the funds will come. So we are going to capture those points, the points that you raised, Honourable Shibambu. I think Honourable Balako has tried to put them together. Honourable McPherson, the same point there you've made. We'll put it into the after year like Namisa. Okay. Honourable Nkongi, is this a new one? Because I thought we'd close off. Well, just one year.
Yes. You know, we have been discussing this matter of the challenges that this matter that Honourable Shibambu is raising. And then we have an expression in one of our meetings, an expression of the challenge that are facing the PPP and affecting the process of internationalization. We have an argument. I don't know, Chairperson, if you have captured somewhere very nice. So if you can capture it on page 12, before the verification of PE compliance, expect our argument in the budget.
Articulate that there's an emphasis. I think, look, there isn't anyone who disagrees with the point. I don't know, there's also one point on revolution.
Do you know, because this is an appropriation process which is saying there must be a billion rand allocated to bring the funds. I think there must be clarity of who is going to be beneficiary of that billion rand, because the possibility of it being utilized to buy shares in existing companies, some of which might collapse in the next 2-3 weeks or 2 months, is very high. So must conceptually reinforce what it means to be a black industrialist and who qualifies to deal with the beneficiary of that. I think that maybe there could be a specification that allocation is meant for companies with 100% owned by certain disadvantaged individuals. I think that can be much more clarified so that it does not open up space for abuse and because if you live in that a person can say, I'm a black industrialist but I'm a 10% owner of a plastic manufacturing company, so fund me. What to prevent government or the state from giving that person money? I mean, industrialist, I'm manufacturing shoes, but I'm a 5% owner of a Chinese-owned company. So we need to reference the meaning of
who is the intended beneficiary of such a beyond point. So that
take your point, but what we must acknowledge and accept, the BBBE is called the trumping clause, the trumping legislation. It states specifically that it trumps all other. And that is why we have got such a strong step when it comes to this MPRDA and the Section 26. Because a trumping clause has been flouted. That is why. And here, again, that already you can see the complaints probably from those in which such company, you know, the percentages were configured in that way, where they were opposing the BBBE codes. It is for this very purpose. Because we want, who should these people be? But what we will do, there's no harm to re-emphasize and clarify that point, Honorable Shvambu. I don't think anyone in the committee would disagree. Let's make ourselves clear so that it is not abused. I think that point is taken. I'm looking at members. Where were we then on these papers? All right, we were here at conclusions, and then Honourable Max Hepson, you brought in the NEF. We've already taken a position on that. We then come to page 27. We've got that one. We'll have the NEF. And I think, yes, it is, ensuring. I think what is important here, which would maybe be overarching, the legislation we said in our oversight report, in the transfer pricing, in all of them, there is a need for legislation. For it to be effective, for the intention to be implemented, it must be in alignment with other legislation. Because that is the reason why we've got these gaps. So if we're saying, look, what's the point of broad-based if you're going to give it to the fat cash or the small cash with 5%, as it were. So here, it is this intention, it's the implementation of that, and that all legislation should be in alignment to, you know, to reach the objectives of the legislation. So we want an overarching thing about the alignment of the legislation, so that the resources allocated are effectively able to produce the intended results. And that applies across the board. So it's not only the broad-based, that particular one, it applies to other challenges we've got here as well. Now, there was a request from yourself, Honourable Shivambu, at the beginning, when is the time for an overarching or whatever statement? Isn't that what you said? Right. Now, before we adopt, can you make that overarching?
And then I also want to speak to the recommendations in terms of, I think recommendation 7.1 should not be left open like that, especially with regards to enforcement of local procurement by the public sector. I think we should specifically say that trade and industry working together with finance should spearhead legislation that enforces that will lead to the local procurement being compulsory, procurement of locally produced goods and services. Because if you say we're encouraging people, they will not comply with it, it's not necessary. They will just say, no, it's an encouragement, it's not compulsory, we don't have to procure things that are produced locally. And you remember from what Professor Bontok said, that the public sector, they even consume accounting services and legal services from outside, basic things that can be sourced locally, they're not even material services. There must be a way of having legislation that guides local procurement. And then on 7.4, the issue of the Minister of Energy and on renewable industry. There is a program which is under the oversight of the Ministry of Energy called the Recycling and Economic Development Initiative of South Africa, REDISA, which basically is law that says that all the tires that are imported in South Africa must pay a certain amount of money with the aim of leading an industrial program on the renewing of the tire. And that program has not been implemented to what initially looked into. Perhaps there must be a concrete reflection in that regard to say that the Minister of Trading Industries will engage with that. And another issue which I wanted to talk to is because the rate in general was adopting the oversight report, it's not opportunity, the issue of SANAS. But SANAS accredits the BEE accreditation commander. And from one of the people who were dealing with that, but were interacting what one day, and the last question was made that out of the 50 companies, possibly 45 or 46 are owned by white people or by white companies. It cannot be. There must be a clear directive that these BEE accreditation companies should be BE, not BE, they must be black owned in terms of what is required. And then the last thing which I want to talk to is the CIPC, that currently chair, although CIPC is not in many provinces, but there is company registration services in all provinces, which are not regulated. They charge whatever amount they charge in terms of it. So companies are registered. You can register a company in Limpopo, but there's no CIPC office in Limpopo. You can register a company in the Northern KwaZulu-Natal or in the Eastern Cape or wherever, but there is no CIPC there. There are agencies which charge whatever amount is, which are not regulated. Perhaps as part of the expansion, which in terms of the plans of CIPC is very slow, maybe there must be an official recognition of agencies that register companies to say that you have the following requirements, the proper office, and these are the prices that can be considered for the company registration process. Because as we speak now, companies are registered possibly in all towns, and most people are exposed to fraudulent activities, and they are exposed to crime and robbery of the monies which we're supposed to pay in all these communities. So there must be a way of directing it towards a clear direction, because the expansion ambitions of CIPC are not going to satisfy the need to organize small traders, to organize potential companies and even the non-governmental organizations. So,
I think one point today which perhaps could have come up more clearly is this point about, we did speak about decentralization much earlier and in the oversight, that there is a need for that. But you will recall that their challenge was the integrity of the data. Now, it would appear what you are saying is that entrepreneurs, being what they are, very enterprising, have now said, well, look, I can do this, and they go along, and they see themselves as an agent, whether they're a lawyer or this or that. Now, I would suggest that we do look at that particular issue, because currently, CIPC, as you know, said they'll do the the electronic terminal, you know, in a different spot. But they will also link up, I think, with SARS and someone else. There may be, in terms of the recommendation in here, the need for us to talk about to accelerate the review and consideration of the decentralization of branches or agencies, or what can we call them? They're not agencies, but outlets that would facilitate the registration under the umbrella or authority of CIPC, and not just anyone doing it. Because what you're talking about, Honorable Shivambu, amounts to runners all over the country, you know, and we said that can be dangerous. But maybe, as someone said, well, maybe they could be roped in and utilized if they are organized and given the authority. But right now, they don't have that authority. And I think that's what our concern was, as I understand. So we can put something into that effect. And let me put it this way to you, which I think is going to help you. We have been strapping it in, but we don't have what I call a clean report. You know, you don't have it in your hand. You've been saying things and wondering, have we captured it? Have we captured it? So what we're going to do is that we've come to the end, we have included the points. I don't think we've just taken a decision to exclude anything. You know, we've put them in. And I've asked Mr. Herman if this can be distributed to members by two, or what's it, three electronically. I expect you to come back to him before the day is out, or early tomorrow morning before 8 o'clock. Is that reasonable enough for every part member here? Okay, that being the case, oh yeah, Arnold MacPherson.
In on page 12 of the report, it makes known the funding challenges of the MCEE program, and acknowledges that basically that are going to run out of money, and I think that for one of our recommendations for going forward is, and you can certainly put it into the you know, the forward planning of the budget, but we need to do that now. Is an allocation of an additional 2.2 billion rand to ensure that there is no shortfall for the funding of the program, because I think that we'll agree that the program has done a lot of good work, and we wouldn't want to stifle the ability of that program to increase the competitiveness of exporters in South Africa. So I'd like to formally propose that in the forward plan for the budget that we include that a recommendation, because this goes up to 2017, 2018, but we need to ensure that as of the next financial year that an additional 2.2 billion rand is allocated to that particular fund. So I would formally like to put that through to the committee to consider. Thank you.
Let me, you know, when I look at what you gave us originally, it's something slightly different. So let me look yourself, Ms. Gold, Chief Operating or Group Operating Officer. I don't know if you heard that specifically. It was to do with economic competitive packages and about these incentives, etc. Are you talking about becoming being reduced? Is that your point you're making, in short?
If you remember when that presentation came to us, they said that they have, the only option that they have is to lower the cap of funding. I fundamentally disagreed with that, because if you look at the majority of, well, certainly the biggest portion of the allocations is to a lot of regearing and recapitalization and renewing of plant and machinery to make those businesses more competitive. And by lowering that cap, you exclude, you know, 90% of applicants. So what we have seen is that it would be sufficient for this budget, for the financial year, but certainly for the next financial year, we would have a problem. Hence, my proposal is that we make an application to Treasury for an additional funding of 2.2 billion rand for 2016-2017 financial year, to ensure the sustainability of the program. Thank you.
When we make these applications, let's think all to where they're coming from. It's so easy to take money out of a budget. Any woman knows that. Right. Honourable Scott. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for coming in early. I think the incentive, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, cap was lower, I think, to about 50 million in the previous financial year. And I think the Minister has also in the committee indicated that funds that seem coming to an end, I think it's in the either 60 or 20, I just have to just double check that. I am aware that the DGI has been in discussion with National Treasury on additional funding to supplement the budget. But I don't have any further feedback in terms of whether we've gotten that indication from you or not. Thank you, Chair.
All right, what we'll do, like I said, I won't take more. I think the point is here, it is understood, but we need a more standard clarification on there. Now, what I wanted to say, Honourable MacPherson, because we don't have a clean copy, what we will do is this afternoon get this to you electronically. so that when it comes to us clean, we got the clean copy. So we'll get this, I'm sure we'll be able to get, you know, in a bit of clarification or standard in on this, so that tomorrow we'll just take a decision on adoption, should we keep that in as it is or isn't. I hope that's clear. Because I know that members are running around all over, and I'm sure you are as well. What I do want to do is to then indicate that we've done as much as we can do now. We've cleaned up the report. There are one or two little extras that have been added here. We haven't refused any of them, but we're asking for a clarification of this one. All right, the one you've just put in. We haven't taken a decision on it. And then we'll get a clean report. Just, Mr. Herman, make sure that you've got the full, that Mr. McPherson gets that clarification. So we have a clean report tomorrow morning at 8:30 on the table. So we're coming into committee at 9 o'clock. I want to thank all those early birds who were here sharp at 10 to 9. And if we do that again tomorrow, we'll be able to put this on the agenda and just spend 15 minutes with it, because we've done it, and then adopt. All right. But I also want to put something to you. You're going to discuss this with your political party. You've done it already. And I do want to persuade members. You know, the House is there for the full expression of your ideological position, etc. But where you find that your committee members, your colleagues, have honestly tried to ensure that this is a committee report and not a this or that, I'm really going to ask you to seriously consider that we do are able to adopt this as a committee and not find ourselves having made all these changes saying, well, we don't adopt it. That doesn't mean you agree to an increase or you're not going to vote against the budget. You want to, you vote against the budget. It's another exercise. But obviously that position rests with you and your party. And that's where I'd like to leave the budget for the moment, and then just quickly close off on this note. Meeting tomorrow will start with that and not the sugar. We'll just start 9 o'clock sharp with the budget, the adoption of the budget. The sugar. Sugar is very important. Please read up on it. It not only is renewable fuel possibility, it also deals with tariffs. It also deals with funding, you know, we're exporting here. All of those issues are important for Sugar Association, and I understand that they are quite labor intensive as well. You would know that, Professor Simon, isn't it all full of sugar down there, Tongot? Yeah. Okay, and also in Pumalanga. Then on Thursday, you can take that off if you've already got it, the 14th of May. We will be adopting tomorrow, that's Wednesday the 13th, the budget. We need to consider transfer pricing. I've asked for it to be handed out today. Hasn't been handed out, and everyone got it. Please have your, hopefully if they take the long ones, written inputs, if you want to make a big input on it, and then we can move faster on that particular one. On that note, we are finished a bit early, and I'm very pleased. We're not going to consider transfer pricing now. I really want you to unpack that properly. Okay, and we're going to adjourn the committee meeting until tomorrow, and we come back to the same meeting room. But for those of you who have other committee meetings, please try and stay here for the first half an hour so that we can adopt the budget. Is that okay for most of you? Thank you. Meeting adjourned.